There's this phrase, feeling it in my bones. But can bones have feelings, or needs, or life? When Devjani Day's bones, or rather her whole skeleton, was found neatly tucked in a bedroom of 3 Robinson Street in June 2015, one wonders, under what spell, or rather delusion, her 44-year-old brother served food to her corpse, poured water every day, and brought her old teddy bears and drawings, kept playing her voice recordings on speakers on loop for 7 months. Partho Dey, diagnosed as schizophrenic and psychotic, must have felt it in his bones that Devjani's bones continued to have life even after death. Welcome to the 3rd episode of Death and a Dysfunctional Family. I'm Dibyut from Ishaville, and I'm going to tell you about the person Devjani Dey, beyond the skeleton, in all her flesh, bones, and mind. Devjani, the elder of the 2 siblings, was born in Calcutta in 1968. She spent her early years with her family in Bangalore before moving to Calcutta in 1989. Since then, their family had been in a bitter property dispute with their uncle Arun Dey. This caused a lot of distress to the family. So much so that Partho and Devjani developed an animosity and a mental block against Arun and their grandmother Shanti, which persisted till the very end. After passing her ISC in Bangalore, Devjani got admitted to Lady Brabourne College in Calcutta to study physics. Later, she completed her BTech in radio physics from Rajabazar Science College. But during this time, her family was going through a rough patch. Devjani and Partho's parents fell out and decided to stay apart for a while. This had an immense impact on the siblings, who grew up isolated from children their age. While Partho lodged with his mother, Devjani stayed with Aurobindo. Partho and Devjani, both students of Rajabazar Science College, would meet each other on campus, and according to a professor there, would spend an uncanny amount of time together. After this, Devjani decided to pursue her interest in music professionally and acquired a degree in piano from Trinity College of Music before joining as a music teacher at Calcutta Girls High School in 1999.
As per school record,
school records say that Devjani Dey joined our school in February 1999 and resigned in February 2004. From the information that I could find in the records, she resigned due to personal reasons, as in she did not mention any specific reason,
said Bashunti Bishash, who's the principal of Calcutta Girls High School. On the other hand, Montu Rakshit, the principal Devjani reported to during her stint, said,
she was very spiritual even back then. Without being particularly religious, for her it was just God, the Almighty. So much so that she'd go to the Ramakrishna Math, the Belur Math, the church, all of them.
According to her colleagues at Calcutta Girls, though Devjani was polite and cordial to everyone, she also had an air of mystery around her. Like no one knew anything about her family. Office superintendent John Karyappa said that her father once came to collect her PF amount. But that was that. Nobody knew that she had a brother and so on. Then she joined Don Bosco School Park Circus, where she taught music before resigning abruptly in 2007. We caught up with Ribhu Mukherjee, who's a lawyer now and a former student of Devjani, from when she used to teach at Don Bosco. This is what he had to say.
You directly studied under Devjani for a year, right, Ribhu?
If my memory serves me right, it was about a year. It's been about, I'd say, around 14 years since ma'am taught in school. It was bizarre in its own way, but I think even more bizarre was when I, you know, the name rang a bell, Devjani. It had already been about 9-10 years. So I went to look at a picture on the news and it turned out to be her. It was not like she was very you know, affable or somebody that, you know, you could, who was very approachable in school. Okay. And it's not like, you know, she maintained some real cordial relationships with the students. So one of the things that struck out for me was that usually other teachers got involved with names, that, you know, you would be on a name basis with the student, that you would know. Devjani ma'am was someone who never found out anybody's names, because she was always isolated from everyone else, because she was constantly teaching music in the music room. You know, other teachers were in the staff room. So maybe that was one of the things that struck out. She had definitely something of a slightly, you know, aloof vibe, I would say, you know, not mingling with the students as much. But obviously, like, the most important thing about her is that, you know, she loved music. I think everything in her demeanor changed when she started, you know, playing the piano. And, you know, I used to learn the piano. Not that I was ever any good at it. But, you know, there were certain things that, you know, as a pianist, you could say, right? Like, you're going to sit upright and you're going to sight read. You're going to be really, really focused on making sure that we get every note right while we're singing and while we're teaching. So this is obviously things that, you know, that I thought was quite interesting about her. You know, those big white eyes with a peculiar sort of glass, short hair, and she would wear that, you know, long skirt, which it's a little bit of that Anglo vibe that you have from Calcutta. Like a lot of Anglo sense of dressing is what I would call it as. She was very graceful, polite, I think. Except once she lost her head at me. How? So yeah, I remember that properly.
How did that happen?
Students in class six, you know, how it is in class six. You're not really, I mean, maybe my school should have known better that students in class six did not want to be learning music. I mean, we had other things to do. So I distinctly remember discussing the thing that we discussed all the time at that time, football. So I was talking to someone who, as it turns out, is now someone who writes about football. So we were discussing something football related. And obviously, and I was doing it quite openly, like while music was going on, I was talking, right? And whether she heard it, whether she spotted me, something, and she got really angry. And maybe how I remember her getting angry was not that, you know, how teachers generally get angry, like, okay, keep quiet. Okay, you're disturbing me. Okay, you're disturbing the class. These are things I've heard before. Mm-hmm. But the general tendency, tone in her voice was just that, oh, you're really, really causing me a lot of discomfort by not letting me teach. You're causing me some sadness, feeling really bad about the fact that I, you know, was caught talking in class. There was this song about Mother Mary, and the first four lines were, no man can live as an island, journey through life alone. Since we have a mother, Jesus gave us his own. Something to that extent, something like that. So I remember going through that bit over and over again. So, and because I've been doing this repetitive, you know, these three lines or two lines over and over again over maybe a few weeks or a few days, it's stuck in your head. Like, I will never forget the lyrics, no man can live as an island, journey through life alone. Because we practiced those two lines so many times because we couldn't get the rhythm or speed or something right. Okay. That, you know, and she was hell bent on making us, you know, get it right. And if we made a mistake, we had to go back again. She was engrossed in her teaching, but she came abruptly to school and then she left abruptly. Seemed to be somebody who was, you know, lost in her own thoughts and generally enjoyed, like, the lyrics of the music. And you know, maybe this is something that, you know, we can look at it in hindsight and say it was coincidence, maybe, or it was not coincidence. A lot of the music that we were actually singing at that point of time were spiritual songs. Okay. Which had no spiritual connection for maybe somebody like me in class six.
If you had to give, you know, describe her from your memory, of course, if you had to describe her with one word, do you have any word in mind?
I think if you ask me this at different stages of my life, I would give you different answers. So if you ask me this as a class six kid who does not know anything about anything, yeah. All right, like nothing, I would use the word weird. Okay, because I do not know any better. And if you ask me this in 2015, when I first heard, I was just like, I wouldn't have a word. I would have a phrase. I would just be like, oh no.
Okay.
How did somebody not spot this? Okay. If you ask me now with like the cleanest possible head, I've used the word already. I would say she was a little aloof, possibly a little lonely in terms of like, you know, having equations in her workplace, at least because that's the extent to which we saw. But I would also use like really nice words about the personality that she was. She was kind. She was polite. A lot of our teachers were unfortunately not very polite. She wasn't like that. She wasn't an overbearing personality.
Aloof, spiritual, quiet, a woman of few words. These were some of the most common words people used to describe Debjani with. In the avalanche of media exposure, anyone who knew Debjani got at that time. But the turning point in her and her family's story came when their mother passed away. Neither Partho nor Debjani attended their mother's cremation or funeral. Even Aurobindo did not. According to a report by Anandabazar Patrika, the entire family did not believe much in death. And this belief, or rather disbelief in death, stemmed from Aurobindo himself, whose suicide exposed this bizarre case from Kolkata. Talk about irony. After their mother, Aruti's death, both Partho and Debjani quit their professional commitments and used to survive off rental income from their property. The family spent the last 8 years in utter dysfunctionality and agoraphobic isolation. Debjani and Partho did not speak to Aurobindo for a long time after their mother's death due to their opposition to Aurobindo's wish of selling the property, for which Aurobindo would meet Orun clandestinely. In fact, in his suicide note, Aurobindo Day asked Partho to forget what had happened and that he loved him. According to Ishita Sanyal, a psychologist who looked after Partho in his last days, says, in his mind, the house on Robinson Street was inextricably linked to the beginning of all problems in his life. But despite that, being the lone source of income, the palatial house on 3 Robinson Street was a major bone of contention between all the members of the Day family. Robinson Street in central Calcutta cannot be called crooked, but it has always been a little off. The 75-meter-long stretch, surrounded by city's smartest streets, Park Street, Loudoun Street, Theatre Road, Rodden Street, has always been a bit of a wallflower. It was named after an erstwhile police magistrate of the city, Charles Knowles Robison. Robison was the architect of the very Gracian Metcalfe Hall on Strand Road, and naming a street after him would have been a neat tribute. Except, by some twist of the tongue, Robison Street came to be known as Robinson Street. According to the Kolkata Street Directory 1915, an H. Colley lived at number 1 Robinson Street and a T.A. Trombley at number 2. But long before it came to be known as the House of Horrors or the site of the Konkal Kando, number 3 Robinson Street had a How attached to it. If you go by the 1915 directory, the house originally belonged to a D.P. How. Aurobindo Day's father, Godadhar Day, whose initials still grace the gate at the entrance in a period deco font, had bought the property from him before independence. On the second floor of 3 Robinson Street, Debjani's grand piano graced the center of a large drawing room of this decrepit colonial home. The room was overrun by nearly 20,000 books about spirituality, if reports are to be believed. Right next to it was one of the bedrooms, which the unmarried siblings shared. Debjani followed a number of religious leaders. U.S. evangelist and born-again Christian Joyce Meyer was one of them. Meyer, a multi-millionaire spiritual guru, alleges her father sexually and psychologically abused her. She has women as the bulk of her followers. Her polemic is to forgive abusers as a victim's salvation. It was her sermons that played like the Day family's background score on speakers in all five rooms of the Day residence. Replacing Devjani's piano strings or Aurobindo's old records. According to Partho, Devjani began fasting in November 2014 after her dogs died in August. Partho's diaries reveal how he believed a witch had cursed his family, which was quote-unquote 100% together. According to Partho, the death of the dogs convinced Devjani that there was some evil energy that had its eyes on the family. And if Devjani had not fasted, it would not leave the already dysfunctional Day family. Did Devjani intend to kill herself? It would seem that unless what she was fasting for happened, her existence held no meaning. And in her quest, she put her life at risk to see whether God loved her enough to save her. Partho said to the police, she felt there was so much trouble in our house. Her fasting may invite God's help. The first time Partho spoke to the media through a gap in the gate of 3 Robinson Street, a reporter asked him how Devjani died. In reply, he said, she fasted unto death. She is very religious.
Did you not stop her from fasting when she began getting sick?
I used to feel very bad. But since it was her religious fasting, she would just pray and fast before she passed away. It takes 45 days for a healthy person to die of hunger. Her fast ended on December 29th with her death. The help she was waiting for never arrived. During this period, she even stopped drinking water after a point. Such was her devotion, or rather delusion. Did the son and the father just watch her die? They allowed the dogs to desiccate too. It was grief, which, in the absence of right interventions and support, engulfed the days like a fire. And Devjani sat praying on the burning deck. In Hitchcock's Psycho, Norman tells Marion, I live on an island. He does, both literally and metaphorically. But I don't mind it, he lies. Then admitting, I do. I just say I don't. Despite the attempts at sensationalism by the media, these lines do fit Devjani's fate perfectly. Who would teach Ribhu and other students the hymn, No man can live as an island, journeying through life alone. Since we are most loved by a mother, Jesus gave us his own. In the next and the final episode of Death in a Dysfunctional Family, we explored the mind of Partho, how this case is not the only one in India, what is the current status of the case, the house on Robinson Street, and why Partho Day set himself on fire in 2017. Stay tuned for the finale. This was Dibyud, and you were listening to Death and a Dysfunctional Family.
Since we're most loved by a mother, Jesus.